Well, thank you. Good morning. First off, I just want to thank you, Dick and Nancy, if she's in the room, for putting these Worldview Forum events, there you are, Worldview Forum events together. They are so important, and you guys have no idea how much effort goes into every single one of these that they do. He plans months, sometimes years in advance to get certain speakers that are in high demand, like Glenn Stanton, and Glenn, wherever Glenn is. And Glenn and I, there you are, brother. So Glenn and I think have been friends for 20 years probably, as the Montana Family Foundation works with Focus on the Family. So as Dick said, we heard a case this week at the United States Supreme Court that is probably, in my estimation, as important as Brown versus Board of Education that was decided back in the 1950s. For those of you who don't know, we have some language in the Montana Constitution that is discriminatory against religion. It basically says that public dollars can go to any form of education except to a form of education that involves a religious component. Now, think if you did that with race or anything else, it wouldn't fly. But for some reason, it's been in our Constitution for almost, for over 100 years, but the issue itself has been, was raised about 150 years ago, and it had its basis in anti-Catholic bias during the Irish potato famine, when the Catholics were coming into the United States in droves, and state legislatures did their best to stop the proliferation of Catholic schools, and so they put this language, they tried to put it in the U.S. Constitution. It failed there, and so they put it in 37 state constitutions. So we began our effort in school choice about 12 years ago, the Montana Family Foundation did, specifically to try to decrease the dropout rate. For those of you that don't know, we have like 1,500 to 2,000 kids a year that drop out of school, and they need access to an education that fits them in whatever form that might take. And the students with their parents need to decide what that looks like. And so what school choice does is it just opens up a broad array of options. No, it doesn't drain tons of kids off of public schools. Those schools in the United States that have full-blown school choice in every form you could ever want to see it have about 15% of the kids that take advantage of school choice, and the other 85% still go to a traditional public school because it works fine for them. So the Montana, let me back up. So in 2008, we began in earnest a school choice effort. We decided the first piece of legislation that we would draft would be a tax credit scholarship bill, because a similar program had already been passed in Arizona, had already been litigated all the way to the United States Supreme Court, and our side won. And so we felt like of any piece of legislation, that would be a piece of legislation that would withstand constitutional scrutiny in the state of Montana. And so we started, and what we did is we actually, myself and another gentleman, Pat Wagner, who used to be a Speaker Pro Tem of the House, went to the attorney that actually argued that case at the U.S. Supreme Court successfully, and we said, would you help us write our bill so that it comports with the Supreme Court decision? In essence, what we were doing was we were writing a memo to the United States Supreme Court using the Supreme Court's own language in bill form in anticipation that someday our legislation might be litigated and possibly litigated all the way back up to the U.S. Supreme Court. That's exactly what happened this week. So we started in 2008. It took 6 years to actually get a bill passed. So our first bill was introduced in 2009. In 2015, the first school choice bill was passed. It was a tax credit scholarship. And immediately the governor's office stepped in through the Department of Revenue and said, okay, these scholarships that are actually private dollars going to private scholarship granting organizations and capturing a tax credit, those can be used at any school you want in Montana, except a private religious school. Well, that's like 95% of the schools in Montana. And so the Attorney General wrote a letter, said to the Department of Revenue, this is absolutely indefensible. And if you get sued, we are not going to defend you. And then they went back and they polled the members of the legislature and they said, let's be clear about this. Did you mean for this scholarship to be used at any school, including private religious schools? And the majority of both the House and the Senate came back and said, yes, that was our intent. So we were able to establish intent. So at that point, Lawsuits were filed. We already knew that they would be. They were waiting in the wings. Lawsuits were filed. We won two district court decisions. Interestingly, the two district court judges used the United States Supreme Court language out of the Arizona case from years ago to justify their positions. And then we lost at the Montana Supreme Court because the Montana Supreme Court pointed to this language that we have in our state constitution, and it's called the Blaine Amendment because Senator James Blaine out of Maine was the first one to push one of these. They pointed to that language and they said, we cannot allow these scholarships to be used at private religious schools because of the language in the Montana Constitution. That was a Christmas present in March when it happened. We've been looking for years, across the United States, legislators and litigators for years have been looking for a case to litigate on point on a Blaine Amendment, and the Montana Supreme Court, in all their wisdom, gave it to us. And so the next step was to petition the court to hear the case. The United States Supreme Court gets about 2,000 petitions a year. They hear about 80 of them. And so the chances of them taking our case were minuscule, but they took it. And so we've been preparing, and we went to DC last week. The case was heard on Wednesday. What an amazing thing to be sitting in the chamber of the United States Supreme Court, surrounded by the people that you have fought this fight with for years. And there were people that were a part of this movement, you know, 10 years ago that I hadn't seen in 10 years that were sitting there in that chamber. And so what an amazing thing to get to do that. In the end, it looks like, I would say based on the arguments, the way they unfolded, first it was Justice Ginsburg that stepped up. She argued standing very forcefully. She was joined by Sotomayor and by Justice Kagan. They stayed on standing for a long time. And I was thinking, for Pete's sake, let's get off standing and get on to the merits. This isn't a standing issue. We eventually did. That charge was led by Alito. Alito moved off into the actual merits of the case. And then, and another thing that was amazing about this case, and we'll show you how important this case is, our attorney argued part of the case, and the attorney that we used was the attorney that successfully litigated this case almost 15 years ago before the U.S. Supreme Court. So he came out of retirement and argued the case for our side. And his time was split with the United States Solicitor General. So the United States government stepped in on our side and argued half of our case. That's how big this is. So, yeah, it was amazing. So as the case unfolded through the morning, obviously our side spoke first, their side spoke next. When Alito began to speak, and then followed by Gorsuch and Kavanaugh, and then finally by Justice Roberts, it became apparent that the arguments, we believe, the arguments were going in our direction. Now, it's really hard to read the court, so you need to be real careful of that. And Justice Thomas never speaks, and Justice Thomas didn't have a question this time. So, but when we listened to the way the arguments were unfolding and the questions the justices were asking, those friends of mine that are in arguing cases at the U.S. Supreme Court on a regular basis came out of there feeling like we will probably win this case 5-4. The big question is going to be, how broadly does the court rule? And we just have to wait and see what happens with that. But I just wanted to thank you. I just wanted you to know that, yes, this is a very important case. If we win this case and the court rules broadly, we can remove religiously discriminatory language from 37 state constitutions. Thank you very much.